Blog Talk Radio. Blog Talk Radio.
To inform, inspire, and empower Alcoholics Anonymous sponsorship, locally and internationally, to be their very best, both personally and spiritually. This is the mission of RumRadio.org, an internet radio program dedicated to carrying the message of recovery to a world plagued by alcoholism and addiction. Alcoholism and addiction is the number one health issue in our world today, and RumRadio.org is actively participating in the solution. Interviews with a plethora of people sharing their experience, strength, and hope. Live Sundays at 9 p.m. Central Time and rewound again on Saturday and Monday. Tune in to 12-Stepology at its best on RumRadio.org.
Welcome and hello. This is Joseph G. with Rum Radio and RumRadio.org, the most comprehensive 12-step sponsorship in the known and the unknown universe. I love that promo. Monty, the man Meyer, did that for us when we did an interview. We exchanged interviews, and he was so impressed with Rum Radio that he put that together. And the interesting, that was the unknown universe. You know, can you just picture it when you hear that promo? Captain Kirk and Jean-Luc Picard and Captain Janeway, you know, they're out on the mission to the unknown universe. And we do that because for a lot of folks out there, they're not familiar with 12-step recovery or how 12-step recovery sponsorship was originally intended to work, and that's why we put it together. That's the unknown. People don't know, and we're trying to bring that message as the message was back in 1939. That's the right message. That's the correct message. That's the message that works. And this is what we're trying to get back to basics. I'd like to acknowledge WNAH, Hoyt Carter, and Tony the Horse, who affords us the opportunity to broadcast live to their listening audience in Nashville, parts of Kentucky, and Alabama. And they do this as a public service presentation. They believe in the work that we do. They know this is helping people. I know personally that it's helped people. And, look, it helps me stay sober and be of maximum service to God and our fellows, and that's what we're about. We'd also like to acknowledge RecoveryToday.net magazine. It's one of the finer recovery journals that affords us some print space from time to time. I'd gratefully like to introduce my co-host, Harold B., Harold is a family intervention specialist. He works with families. He can work with troubled families. And I personally believe that families are the basic unit of our society. And as the family goes, so does the nation. So does the country. So does the world. The family has been being beset on all sides today. Correct principles are not being taught to children. And the children, for the most part, are growing up like empty lot weeds in the mean streets. The drugs and alcohol are part and parcel of this phenomenon of the breakdown of the family. You go to the prisons, and the majority of the folks in the prisons, men and women, are there because connection to drugs and alcohol. There really is not all that many career criminals out there, even though they're connected up. Most of these have to do with drugs and alcohol. So it's undermining the whole society. It's just, it's epidemic proportion. There is a solution, the 12 steps, and a belief in God. We call them a higher power, but that means you have to make a connection with the Supreme. We believe that in every man and woman, there's an intrinsic belief in God. And when that is, when you go away from that area, when you don't believe that anymore, when you start walking in the sparks of your own fire, these things, you become available to all this phenomenon. So, Harold, tell us, how you doing tonight?
I'm doing great, Joseph. Thank you for that introduction, and I appreciate the opportunity to be on the air. And this is one of the ways that I strive every day to be more useful to God than the day before. And this is a spiritual solution. It's a spiritual problem. The disease of addiction is a family disease. And so even though there's a bit of resistance to the folks that don't have a drinking problem or a drug problem, the other family members, it takes some talking and convincing to help them understand how the 12 steps can help them. But I like to say that for the wives, for the husbands of women with drinking problems, for the kids whose one parent or both parents have a drinking problem, I like to tell them that really what we need to do at this point, once the drinker starts to get help, it's really helpful for the family members to learn more about taking care of themselves. That's what Al-Anon is all about, and that's what the 12 steps are all about, how to find a spiritual solution, how to increase our conscious contact with God, and how to take care of ourselves better. Instead of spending all this time wiping up the vomit and lying to the drinker's employer, they need to be taking care of themselves better. And so I'm fairly successful convincing people that it's time to do something for yourself. And so I see a lot of families, and we work on a lot of solutions. The family unit is very, very important, and it seems to me, after a couple of decades of doing this work, that things are gradually becoming worse and worse. The family is deteriorating. So many parents both work outside the home, and they really don't have the contact to provide, to nurture the relationships with their kids. And so the kids go to the mall, and there's a lot of negative influence at the mall. The mall sort of has taken the place of the family. You know, with the smells, the Cinnabon, it's a wonderful smell. They meet at the Orange Julius stand, and families.
Cinnabon,
hard.
Don't forget Cinnabon.
Yes, didn't I say that? Cinnabon,
no.
The smell. And the families seldom sit down and have a dinner together. They don't have a family home evening very much. I see very few families who have that. I try to reinstitute that, and so it seems like an uphill battle. The schools aren't much help. They seem to want to take a cookie-cutter approach to the kids. I have a lot of kids who really have a different learning style than average, and they're not accommodated very well in the schools. And, you know, who can blame them? The public schools, the teacher-student ratio the student-teacher ratio is going up and up and up. Who could work with 25, 30, 35 kids? And many of them have unique needs. So this is part of being on the radio, is part of my way to give back, and I really appreciate the opportunity. The 12 steps, I would certainly be dead if it weren't for the program of Alcoholics Anonymous and the 12 steps. All the anonymous programs, the 12 steps have been adapted to all sorts of trouble. And from the very beginning, I could tell that anyone on earth reading the 12 steps could really benefit from this way of living. So I really appreciate them. And the key to the whole thing, though, is working with others. And that's what Joseph and I present on Rum Radio every week. and rumradio.org. Oh, by the way, there is a chat room available. If you don't want to talk on the radio, you can go to the chat room, and you do that by going to rumradio.org, clicking on the upper right, the live radio program, and then go down. You can find the chat room on Blog Talk Radio. So, Joseph, do you want to lead us through the third step prayer?
Yeah, we're going to do that. I'd like to give out the phone number. If any of you folks out there would like to chime in and make it a discussion, that's fine. We're going to be doing tonight one of the stories, prime story, the first story on the rumradio.org website. We haven't done any of the website in a while, and I thought it was a good time to do that. We usually do interviews lately, but I'd like to get the body of the website little by little into a audio format, because there's some folks out there that either can't read and have friends that are blind, and if they have the opportunity, they can listen to the website. And that was the idea of doing the radio show. And we have most of the website on the radio format, and this is one of the posts, one of the featured posts. And before we get into that, I'd like to do the third step prayer. Oh, and the phone number. If you'd like to call in, let me give you the phone number. 949-534-0621. Again, 949-534-0621. So you're more than welcome to call and chat, give us your opinion. You know, if you get 15 alcoholics in a room, you're going to get 20 opinions. So I know you guys are out there with an opinion. The third step prayer is found on page 63 of the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. We are not AA. We're not NA. We're not CA. We're probably closer to Paranoids Anonymous, but nobody will tell you where they hold the meetings. We're Rum Radio. We use the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous and the 12 and 12 and Messages from the Heart and Drop the Rock. And there's some really good program literature out there. But the program tells us anything we find that we can help enliven our minds and keep the next sufferer and ourselves sober is welcome in the rooms. There's no chain of understanding that you cannot bring things that work. That's a misconception of conference-approved literature. I have it on the site. Dick B. wrote a great article. I have it under the drop box under the captain's table. The myths, urban legends, and the parroting of the conference-approved police. There's no such critter, per se, of conference-approved literature. Whatever the group conscience agrees to use in the rooms is conference-approved. The conference is your group conscience. That's it. If the group conscience says it's okay and they want to bring in the Velveteen Rabbit as a meeting, go for it. You're okay. Every group has the right to be wrong. Every group has the right to be right. There's no one to tell anybody what to do in there, but we try to have a veneer of civility. We try to carry that out and try to keep to the program of Alcoholics Anonymous and the solution of recovery. So third step prayer is found on page 63 of the basic text of the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. I usually give these to my sponsees, my new sponsee. One of the first things I ask my new sponsee before I take them on, you have to qualify your prospects. You have to qualify them, and I ask them, have you had enough? That means, have you had enough pain? Have you had enough humiliation? Have you had enough alcohol? Have you had enough? Yes or no? Yes. If you get a no, you're just telling them, well, this is, you know, keep coming back, and, you know, if you find an answer here, you're more than welcome. Good. Yes. Okay, we got an affirmative. Are you willing to go to any length to achieve sobriety? Very important that he says that he makes that agreement with you. Not so much what he's telling you, it's what he's telling himself. He's making that agreement. He's willing to go to any length to achieve sobriety. You're not going to ask him to do anything weird. Don't worry about that. But you have to know that he's committed to do the work. I tell my sponsees I'll put as much effort into their recovery as they do, no more, no less. My job as a sponsor is bring him to a relationship with God. That's it. Not with me, but initially I have to lead him on a little bit. The Big Book calls him a protege. Isn't that an interesting word? It's a French word, protege. In other words, I'm going to try to teach him what I learned and my ability to stay sober the way I did it, so he becomes my protege. So the Big Book says, call him sponsees. And I ask him to go get a home group. He needs a home group. The home group is where he connects up with the fellowship. It's the bright spot of our day, usually, but the fellowship is not recovery. The fellowship is where we meet. And this is where we find our sponsees and where we get program literature. And these are the places we go, so we're not alone anymore. This is the fellowship. But to find a home group and then get the names of 20 or 30 men, I believe men with men and women with women. They're always discussing this on Facebook, you know, how that all works. I had a nice little post on it. You know what? Men with men, it's easier to identify with the same gender. One, sponsorship is an intimacy and can be easily misconstrued and can lead into a romantic liaison, which would be devastating to both parties. So why take the chance? If possible, you stay to the gender proper. If you can't, if for some reason you find this woman or you find this guy that you figure, hey, there's a connection here, I'm going to go with it. You know what? Go with it. Work the steps. That's the final agreement on all of it. You work the steps. If it doesn't work out with that person, well, then you go to another meeting if you have to and get another sponsor because you've agreed to go through any length to achieve sobriety. And you can always change sponsors. If it works for you, hey, more power to you. The goal is to work the steps. And then once he gets the names from the men, I want him to call a fella every day and ask him permission to recite the third step prayer found on page 63. The reason I have him do that is to get used to picking up the 500-pound telephone and asking for help. Two, he connects up with his fellowship. They get to know his name, and he gets to know their name. Three, the third step prayer or the surrender prayer is what we're going to try to accomplish by working all 12 steps. And fourthly, the person he's calling might have been thinking about picking up his first drink, first hit a crack, first a whatever, and the chances are he will not. No guarantee, but your sponsor is already into service, which we find to be the linchpin of long-term recovery. And this is the prayer. God, I offer myself to thee to build with me and do with me as thy wilt. Relieve me of the bondage of self, that I better do thy will. Take away my difficulties, that victory over them may bear witness to those I would help of thy power, thy love, and thy way of life. May I do thy will always. Can I get an amen on that?
Amen.
Thank you, Harold.
Wonderful prayer, well, yes.
Well, tonight we're going to do a doctor, a lawyer, and an Indian chief. It's the featured post on Rum Radio. It's also a picture, if you see, the man on the bed. It's an iconic picture. I believe it was painted in the 1953. And it depicts a picture, or to some degree, of Dr. Bob, Bill W., who is the chief architect of AA, and Bill Duck, who was a lawyer in the hospital. And to give you the background, so that's what I say. We had a doctor, a lawyer, and the chief architect. So we had a doctor, a lawyer, and an Indian chief. And these are the first three of AA. Dr. Bob and Bill, at this point, Dr. Bob had 18 days sober. Bill was probably pushing around 6 months sober. Had worked with other alcoholics on Skid Row, but nobody was staying sober. This is the second half of the story of how Bill W. and Dr. Bob met. We have it on the 12th step. It's under Billy Pilgrim at the Mayflower. It's a great part of the story, but that we had that at another time. Give you a thumbnail. Bill was on a mission or on a job, on a temporary job assignment in Akron, Ohio. And he was doing some proxy work, and he was good at it. It wasn't working out too well. And he was at a hotel, the Mayflower, in Akron, and I believe it was on a Sunday night, I think. I'm not quite sure. I think it was a weekend. Everything was kind of closed, and he had the lounge, and his first thought was, but, you know, business isn't working well. He's away from home. He's been sober a whole 5 months or so, a little over 5 months, and, you know, feeling a little down in the trough. And as he put it, he was thinking about getting two bottles of gin and being king for the night. That was his first thought. The alcoholic's first thought. And for some reason, his wife, Lois, had told him earlier on that he was complaining that no one was staying sober. And she turned around and said, "Yeah, Bill, but you are." Little bell rang. Instead of getting the two bottles, and there's the liquid lounge facing him right there, the bar lounge, the hotel lobby lounge is right there. I call it the liquid lounge, is right there where there's, you know, fast women and cold beer. You know, there it is. And what a place for an alcoholic to be, huh? Well, he sees a sandwich board out in the lobby, and those words of Lois rang in his ears, "You're staying sober." So he made up his mind. He's going to work with another alcoholic. Had to find one. Out of town. He goes into the liquid lounge. He sees a sandwich board out in the lobby with some names of churches. That might be a good fame. Some of these ministers might know some of the town drunks that he could saddle into. Good idea, right? Kind of creative. Goes into the lounge and asks for some nickels. My guess is it was a roll of nickels. I can't see somebody handing him a handful of nickels. I would think it would be, and that was a common form of tender back then, and it was a time before dimes. The telephone could be actuated with a nickel. The old nickel. This is the nickel. This is before the dime came around for the phone booth, 1935. So he gets I think there was, 40 nickels. 40 nickels in a roll, and goes in the lobby, and he starts making phone calls. And, of course, they don't know what he's talking about, if he can get a hold of anybody. It's like today with cell phones. You know, you call, everybody's got a cell phone, nobody answers. Harold, are you familiar with the story?
Oh, yes. It's wonderful. It's a wonderful story. They do a pretty nice depiction of it in the movie, My Name is Bill W. And so I've had a couple of occasions to watch the movie, and that's how it's depicted. He's getting down to down to his last nickel. So, let me mention here, I have the chat room open now. So, folks, if you'd like to find that chat room, you can go to rumradio.org, click on the Blog Talk Radio in the upper right, and then when you get to Blog Talk Radio, click the Live button on the upper left. And then you can go down the right column and you can find the chat room under Rum Radio. Okay, go ahead, Joseph.
Sure. So he's making the phone calls and no luck. They don't know what he's talking about, or he can't find anybody. They don't know what he's talking about or what have you. Probably nobody's answering probably. But he's making the calls and, you know, they don't know. So finally, in desperation, he's thinking, and this is my, what I call it, discernment. And the historians, I've read several historical accounts, no one knows for sure exactly how this happened, but logic and reason and understanding tells me, I've read several of the accounts, is that he calls New York. He gives up locally, and having no luck, he calls New York, and he calls Dr. Sam Shoemaker at the headquarters. One of the archivists has this, another one doesn't. He calls Sam Shoemaker, who's at the world headquarters of the Oxford Group and an Episcopal minister. And he's telling Sam, and Sam says, "Hey, wait a minute, I know an Episcopal minister that he had met." There's historical proof that Sam had met another Episcopal minister connected with the Oxford Group, no less, in Akron, Dr. Tunks. So they're always curious how he happened to get to Dr. Tonks. They think it's it was an odd word that Bill used to use. Bill was a writer, you know, so he liked to play with words, and this was kind of a word he would use, a tonk or something, and something, and he just happened to find Dr. I don't believe that. I believe Dr. Shoemaker gave him Dr. Tonks. They're both Episcopal ministers. They're both connected to the Oxford group. Come on. It's not rocket science. So he calls up Dr. Tonks, and Dr. Tonks gives him the name of 10 men. Well, voila. So he's making some more calls now. Those nickels are running down. I mean, it's still only 40 nickels, even a, you know, call. And probably the long-distance call to New York was, what, maybe about, I don't know, 40, 50 cents at the time. So the nickels are running down, and he calls Tonks, and so finally, no luck. But he talks to one fella, the guy, I think Schneider is his name. I don't remember his name. He's not a drunk either, but he knows Henrietta Seiberling. And he puts her on, and Henrietta Seiberling is a pillar in the Akron Oxford groups. And she knows. And Seiberling is quite the name. Frank Seiberling was known as the Little Napoleon of Rubber. And Bill knew of him when in his halcyon days. So like, is that a great word? Halcyon days. That's, you know, the wild days of, you know, the high-headed days of Wall Street during the rush. And he was little, you know, now he's a kind of a broken down drunk kind of deal, you know, and his ego is going like, well, wait a minute, I can't really call this guy. You know, he knows me, or I know him, or, you know, and I'm going to say, hi, this is Bill Wilson. And, you know, and I'm a drunk now. And, you know, and you're a big shot. And, you know, like, I'm going, oh, brother, you know what? You know what, Harold?
What?
He got over it. He called. He made the call. He got over his ego. Good for Bill. That was great. That was tough. That was hard to make that call. And the curious thing about it, like you said, and they depict this, it's either dramatic or true or a little bit of both, it was his last nickel. The last nickel in the roll. He's on a roll now. The last buffalo. Throws it in and gets a connection. Henrietta. Henrietta was Frank's sister living in the garage house. And he tells a story, and she's got a project. And her project's name is Dr. Robert Smith. So she invites Bill to come over and sets up the appointment between Robert Smith and Bill Wilson. Bill comes down into the carriage house and meets Dr. Bob. And Dr. Bob is really not friendly kind of guy. He was after you got to know him, but he was kind of a standoffish Vermont Yankee. If you know the Vermont folks, they, unless you know them for a couple generations, you're a stranger there. You know, so he wasn't really too accommodating to the strange guy coming into the house. And first thing he told Bill, he says, I'll give you 15 minutes. And then he said, what could you tell me in 15 minutes? He says, I've been prayed over. Now, he had Jesus. He, you know, he was a religious guy. He read his Bible, and he went to church on a regular basis. He says, I've taken the cure, which was the belladonna cure, and he said, dunk you into ice water. And he says, I've taken the cure. He says, I've been sliced and diced more than a Christmas turkey. What are you going to tell me in 15 minutes that's going to keep me sober? And the magic words that came out of Bill W.'s mouth was, I'm not here to keep you sober. I'm here to keep me sober. Wow, the bell went off, the light, the epiphany. Wow, he's here to keep, what, something about that, you know, that's got a ring to it. They talked for 6 hours. 15 minutes was right out the window. 6 hours. You know, Bill's a salesman. Big book it calls a prospect, which is a sales term.
Well, I love Bill's that story. And the part where Bill overcame his ego worked in two situations. One was to make the call, and the other was to admit to Dr. Bob that he wasn't there to give him any advice. He wanted to to come as an aid to keeping himself sober. That's great. I get a chance to tell that story a lot, and I love it. Joseph?
Thanks, Harold. So they talk for 6 hours, and Dr. Bob is intrigued. If you've been in the program of recovery for any length of time, and you've got some lint, I have 16 years, and I think Harold, what, he got 25 or something. You get with folks like that, and you get into conversations about recovery. You can go on for hours. For folks that are not in the program, they don't get it, but we can go on for hours. There's that much that we talk about in recovery. We go into the depth and the breadth of our experience. And one drunk talking to another drunk, there's something magical about it. It goes beyond sympathy. People who are not in the program can be very sympathetic to the plight of the alcoholic and the drug addict, very much so. And some of our biggest supporters were not alcoholics and drug addicts. They were just civilians. And they had sympathy that went the extra mile. But there's an empathy between one drunk and another that cannot be beat. We can talk to each other like no one else can. We have experienced life on life's terms in a certain particular way, so we relate to each other. We're people that normally wouldn't mix, but we have this common thread of survival. And that survival, and we talk to that survival, and some of it's humorous. It's the humor born in pathos. Pathos is pain. If you ever look at the two masks of drama, one is pathos and one is comedy. And you know what? We're not a glum lot. And when we talk to each other, we have a good time. So here they are to having that six-hour conversation, how to be a fly on the wall. I could have just pictured that conversation. Well, Dr. Bob is feeling his oats, and he's feeling really good. And 2 weeks later, he's got an appointment with the American Medical Association Convention in New York City. And he was looking forward to this trip. Okay, we'll start with the story. Bill Wilson was introduced to Dr. Robert Smith. Okay, we got that. Dr. Bob was indeed intrigued, but was not yet convinced that a life run on self-will could hardly be called a success. And the illusion of control is the last to go. Bill stayed in touch and could see a breakthrough with a kindred soul who also had the same like an affinity for the spirits. You got to remember now, this is Bill's first sale. You know, he didn't keep anybody else sober, but him and Dr. Bob was buying what he was selling, and he could sense that they were in a breakthrough. So after several weeks of sobriety, Dr. Bob felt he could go to the American Medical Association convention. Oh, it was in Atlantic City. I'm sorry, not New York City, Atlantic. Just down a road a piece. He was drunk before the train left the Akron station, and a mighty bender ensued. Upon his return, he dried out for several days, but still having the shakes when his sober friend, Bill, gave him his last drink, a bottle of beer, to steady his nerves so he could perform surgery that afternoon. So Bill came back. Bill was hanging out. Bill could feel a salesman. I'm a salesman. And you know when you got somebody that you're ready to close. Bill was a closer. He was ready to close this deal. So he hung out, and he came back, and there's Dr. Bob. And Dr. Bob went on the bender, and he never actually made it to the convention, from my understanding. He just made it back to Akron. And he's got surgery that morning, and you can see God's hand in the deal. Bill shows up at the right perfect timing. And the only way, it's called a delirium tremors, the nervous system is shaky because of the lack of alcohol, craving alcohol. And then they would take what they call bug juice because you'd feel like you'd have like bugs coming out of the nerves, you know, be tingling and would feel like bugs were coming out. So they called it bug juice. So Bill said, look, I'll go get you some beer to steady your nerves, steady your hands so you can go do your surgery. After the surgery, Bob said, I'm going through with this. Quite an interesting statement. I'm going through with this. and he spent the balance of his day of sobriety making amends, probably still smelling of alcohol, to people he had harmed. And he had never had another drink. That was his last drink. That was Dr. Bob's last drink. I believe the humiliation of having Bill see to his needs so that he could operate as a doctor in his surgery was the last nail in his drinking career. What do you think, Harold?
Absolutely. That makes sense to me. That's quite a story.
Most people don't, you know, they don't know why, but that's what I came up with. I think that was the thing that finally, that was the nail, was the humiliation, having this other drunk, having to buy him a drink for a doctor to complete his surgery. That's got to be humiliating. No way around it. 18 days later, now I thought it was three, but it was 18 days later. Now he had his last drink. Now you got to remember, he had the Oxford group going. He had the four absolutes, and he had the six steps. You remember the absolutes? Absolute love, absolute truth, absolute integrity. I don't forget what the fourth one was. And they would practice the four absolutes. You remember, Harold?
Let me look that up.
Okay. And then and they had six steps. Now, he had all that already. He was in the Oxford group. So he had that information. This wasn't all alien. This wasn't all brand new to Dr. Bob. So 18 days later. So they're going, okay. I think I have it. Let's see. We had the four absolute. Honesty, unselfishness, love, and purity.
Yes, honesty, unselfishness, love, and purity.
Yeah, then I had put it down. Bill W. eventually, I don't know if Dr. Bob did, but Bill eventually, or AA eventually, got rid of the four absolutes. I think his statement was, an alcoholic doesn't do anything absolutely. So he kind of toned it down. Old AA was more Christian-oriented. They were at a higher level of understanding spiritually, I believe, than they are today. Some of the stuff, even back then, was a little hard for some of the alcoholics to swallow. Most of the alcoholics came in were of a Christian ilk. Right? Did you know that?
Yes.
One of the early requirements, they had like a million requirements. They got together and they're going, okay, well, let's see, what kind of requirements do we need for this? And they had the groups as the groups started evolving. There was only two initially, and then there was the Akron. There was a group in Akron, and they were sending in requirements, and all the requirements to become an alcoholic, no one could join. You know, he would like... Groucho Marx said, I won't join any club that would have me as a member kind of deal. It's in the big book. We wouldn't let in crackpots, fallen women. You know what they mean by fallen women?
Prostitutes?
Actually, it's even less than that. Women alcoholics were considered fallen and beyond redemption. So initially, there's a little controversy about that, but I think it took a little, not long, before they let women in. It happened fairly quickly. Sister Ignatia, which was another story, I think we might be able to get if we finish this up. We can get into. Did we do the Sister Ignatia story? I don't think so.
Oh yeah.
We did. Okay.
Yeah.
Sister Ignatia had made the observation that in Akron, I believe they had like 18 beds for male alcoholics and two or three for women. And that women, it was harder for women to get sober than men. You know why? You know what she said?
Why?
Women had the ability to stay in denial longer.
That's interesting. You know, women only got the right to vote in 1930.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, woman suffrage. That was, yeah. And this is, okay, so we're talking about, this is 1935.
Yeah.
This is 4 years before the publication of the first edition of the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous, which is an interesting part of the story. So now they have the four absolutes, and but he's going around to all the people in his town that he owed an amends to, the amends process. Now you got to remember early on, the first three steps were done, even a little later on during the organization of AA, was a form called the surrender. You familiar with that, Harold?
Go ahead and say more about it.
The surrender was done at the hospitals because Bill went to find Bob, and then Bill and Bob went to the hospital and found number three, Bill D. So that was the template of understanding where your prospect would be more than likely found in the hospital. So that was the happy hunting ground for alcoholics. You were, because that's where Bill and Bob found Bill D. So they were just going to repeat that process over and over and over again because they found it to be the most productive. And you look in the traditions; it talks about fellas going to the hospital, and also it gives you instruction. Chapter 7 tells us how, as a sponsor, how to work with a sponsee. The only thing is that this is related to going to a hospital and working with the families, which is practically non-existent anymore. Is that your experience, Harold?
Yes, that's sadly, that is what I've been seeing.
The 12-step call, we used to call the 12-step call, and it was around... when I was getting sober 16 years ago, it's practically non-existent in some places now. A 12-step call is when someone would call in, you have an intergroup or the club or the group, and say that there's someone or they're in dire straits and they'd like somebody to come over. They can't make it to a meeting because they're just so out of it. Can someone come over?
And I've got the opportunities to, my first sponsor was a great guy. They called him the book Nazi. He did everything by the book. So we went out together on many 12-step calls. Some of them were to the family. Often the family would come. They would need to talk about things and just figure out what to do next, doing the next right thing. And we spent many hours talking with family members, kids, spouses. Sometimes that was a real valuable 12-step call.
And my experience is that usually when you went in there, there were pizza boxes and vomit and empty bottles and smelled bad and the guy hadn't washed in forever and, you know, and he was still coming down or was still coming up and he's kind of out of it. And for him to call you means that he was pretty desperate.
Yes.
He was getting to we call it the jumping off point. He was coming to the jumping off point and didn't know what else to do. Now, let's see, what should I do? Should I call my broker or should I call AA? You know, it was AA. Okay, let me find out. I've heard about AA. Let me look in the phone book. Ah, there it is, AA. Oh, okay, hi. Hey, look, I'm dying here. Can somebody come out and bury me? You know, I need some help. I need help. Can you send somebody? And usually the agreement was you never went alone because you never knew what you found when you went. So it's still a recommendation today. If someone calls and you go, never go alone. Like American Express, you bring your sponsor with you or you bring your sponsee or you bring another member with you. You never go on these calls alone. There's no telling what you might find and what might happen. You'll need a backup and a way out, that's for sure.
Yeah.
Most of the time you're okay.
If we hadn't had the child locks on the back doors of the car, One time we picked a guy up to help him, and in the middle of the trip on the highway, he was going to try to open the door and jump out of the car. We had to have the child locks. We had the child locks on, and we thanked God that we did. Joseph?
Thank you, Harold. Yeah, they were exciting times, there's no doubt about it. And let me tell you, I have it on the website. There's a fellow, it was on the 1950 Grapevine, which is our magazine. I heard it through the Grapevine, and the Grapevine gives us stories and humor, scenarios in AA, keeps us up to date. It's in the 1950 Grapevine, how a fellow came in, was one day sober, and went on a 12-step call. And it was a benefit to both him and to the person he went to. Some of the best sponsors will be the new guy, because they have the enthusiasm of getting and attaining sobriety. It works in churches too. New converts are filled with the Spirit, and that's the way it is in AA. The new guy he's just bubbling over with enthusiasm. And you know the definition of a sale? The transference of enthusiasm.
Yes.
So you bring a new guy with you, you bring a new sponsee with you, if you can get out there and do a 12-step call, and believe me, his enthusiasm can often carry the day. The problem now is that the rehabs is a big money-making business. It's a business. And the business is helping the drunk get sober. So they market, and there's competition for everything. You know, there's only so many drunks to go around that are willing to go to rehab. So there's competition among the rehabs. And, of course, AA particularly doesn't advertise. They're doing a little bit more now, and the GSO is a public service presentation. But for the most part, we don't advertise like they did in the beginning. It's attraction, not promotion. That's another whole story that was about anonymity, so nobody would know that I was, people, they shrink down in their seat when their first meeting. They might have been a drunk in a city of millions, the town drunk in a city of millions. Now they're afraid somebody might see them at a recovery meeting. Okay, so we'll keep your anonymity, which is fine. We prefer you keep your anonymity. No one speaks for AA. I like to say, one of the guys in one of the groups used to say, there's no big shots. If one shot, we're all shot. So we have no gurus in AA, although that's why I started the word stepologist. The meaning is that we're a group, and our only function is to stay sober and help the next sufferer. That's it.
I like what Joe Caney had to say a few years ago, that the rehabs help get people sober, and then they go to AA and work the 12 steps in order to stay sober. Big difference.
There you go. Yeah. So the rehabs advertise, and I'm looking at this advertisement and go, hey, look, I have insurance. I got money. I can buy my way into sobriety. What do you think, Harold? Can I buy my way in?
Yeah. Well, that's the initial thought, and some people are really helped by that. I know rehab was a boost for me. And actually, I probably could have made it just starting off with the meetings, AA meetings, and the 12 steps. If I got a sponsor, that was the key to my whole, I tell many people, what really helped me was working the steps with a sponsor.
Yeah, that's my experience as well. I hadn't gone to a rehab, so I can't really speak highly of them. Some of them work for some people, they just do. But I can't really speak too much to it because I don't have that experience. So, but we've had people that run rehabs on the show, inpatient. I like the inpatient, the outpatient more than the inpatient personally. I think from a psychological point of view, my thought is that when you put somebody away for 28 days, you're building up a demand. They're not able, like behind a wall, they're not able to get the booze, they're not able to get the drugs, and then the wall comes down at 28 days. Well, they got 28 days of sobriety, but the demand is so great at the time, hey, I've been sober for 28 days. You know what? I'm going to celebrate. And there they go. You know, off they go. Not always. I don't know. I know some people would save their lives going to rehab, so I can't really say. But the problem is today, why we're not doing the 12-step calls is because the rehabs are advertising and people are going to the rehabs, and so they're not calling AA. They're calling rehab.
And the world of counseling has a commitment to only suggest the least restrictive type of treatment that's needed by the person. So if they're real bad, they'll recommend detox. If they're medium, if their addiction is in a medium state or stage, they recommend residential treatment. Or if they feel that they can be helped by outpatient treatment, they recommend that. Whichever's least restrictive and likely to be effective, that's the way the world of counseling works.
Oh, I didn't know that. But anyway, so what happens is that they go into rehab. So the 12-step calls, I believe, last word I got here in Houston, there's a 200-person waiting list to go on a 12-step call. And I don't know, you know, I haven't checked within a group, but I'm pretty sure that's fairly accurate. I haven't seen a 12-step call or heard of a 12-step call in a long time. Although we'd man the phones, you would think that would be a fairly regular thing. So I need to be confirmed, but I think that's what's going on. And it's a shame because it was a great way for the sponsee to get into service right away get right into the pit of it, right into the trenches. And I think that's where we've lost a lot of it, is that the meetings have become recovery and not working the steps of meeting. You see, Dr. Bob, once, you know, he made his amends. Now, this is not recommended that all of a sudden, and a lot of sponsees want to do that. The first thing they want to do is, you know, they get on fire. They want to go make an amends. They haven't really worked the fourth step yet. Harold, have you ever got that? They want to go out and make an amends right away? You know.
Yes, some people do. They really feel excited about being in recovery, and they just want to skip right to step 9. But it's very important, folks, if you're new to the 12 steps, to do them in order. They were designed that way for a number of very good reasons. Joseph?
Thank you, Harold. So now we're going back to Bill and Bob. We left that hanging there with the four absolutes. And Bob told Bill that the only way they were going to keep this thing, sobriety, was they had to give it away. Oh, brother. But you can't give away something you don't have. That's the dilemma. You have to get this at least to a certain extent before you can give it away. The two men of destiny went to Akron City Hospital, June 26, 1935, and there met Bill Dotson. Oh, Dotson, it was tough. Bill Dotson, the man on the bed. It was AA number 3. His date of sobriety was the date he entered Akron City's hospital for his last detox, June 26, 1935, which is interesting. But they caught him on the day he entered. Did you see that?
Yes.
It was his first day. Now, usually the stay was 6 days. You had 6 days to work with him. So in the big book where it says, you know, don't force yourself onto your prospect. You know, let him digest it a little bit. Now, when people read that today, they're not putting in their mind that there's a six-day window of opportunity here. And unless you caught them on the first day, you had less than 6 days with your prospect. So when it says give them a time to breathe, they're not talking about a long breather. They're talking about a day, maybe two, to let him digest his food. You see it?
Yes.
So it's not like you just, you know, you come back 2 weeks later, he's gone. So the window of opportunity is very slim to get this guy's attention. The painting was done in 1955, the man on the bed painting, which is all over. It's an iconic description of AA in the throes of, I call it, gestation. The man on the bed. The fellow in the foreground has a book in his hand. You'll see there's a book, which is 4 years before the publication of the big book. 4 years before the big book, and he's got a book in his hand. The only books that were allowed in the hospital usually, you know which book that was?
The big, big book, the Bible.
The Bible, right. That was the only book that they usually let you bring in was the Bible. It was a, you got to remember, this was a different circa. You know, Bible thumping was the way. You know, people were very astute and very Christian-minded at the time. So the Bible was like everybody had one. And if you were going to bring something in to save a soul, the Bible was the key to it. So now you had Dr. Bob, Bill D was a lawyer, and the chief architect, Bill W. So this thing of ours started with a doctor, a lawyer, and an Indian chief. Bill D was number three in recovery. It's almost biblical. In the big book it says, if two or three are gathered with no other affiliation, they can call themselves an AA group. And, of course, the Bible tells us, when two or three are gathered in my name, I will be amongst them. Boy, that has a familiar ring to it, doesn't it?
Yes.
So here's the first AA group, Bill D, Bill W, and Dr. Bob. So there's the first group of AA 4 years before the big book. Reading right out of the Bible. Originally, it was going to be called, one of the names for AA was going to be the James Club. And that was because a lot of the AA comes from, the big book comes from the book of James. Not all of it, but there's segments in it, segments of understanding that come in there. A lot of people in the program today, we did a post on it. Easing God out of the rooms. We have a new group that started, Secular Recovery. Did you hear about that one, Harold?
No.
Yep. Yes,
bad.
Sir.
Because the
bad,
step
bad, 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 bad.
We
Secular
can
Recovery.
Steps right back to the Book of Matthew, chapter 5, the Sermon on the Mount. That's where it came from. Joseph?
Yeah, and Proverbs are in there. There's all kinds. There's a lot of scriptural references in the big book. We don't require anyone to have any religious affiliation whatsoever. What we ask you to do is to keep an open mind. The key to long-term sobriety is willingness, even willing to be willing. I like to put it to you this way. The problem with willingness, it takes some discipline. The problem with discipline is it takes motivation. The problem with motivation is not now becomes never. So this is something we have to make up our mind to do. I can get sober, but not today. No, it has to be today. Now is the time. So once you have that motivation, then you can get the discipline, which gives you the willingness, and now you're on your way. So you're willing to be willing is like the mustard seed. All we ask is just a little bit, just a slight, willing to be willing, and it'll grow. If it's the right seed planted in the heart, it will grow, and AA is the right seed. It works. Rarely have we seen a person fail who's thoroughly followed our path. There are those that will not, or cannot give themselves to the simple program. They seem to be constitutionally incapable of being honest. They're not at fault. They seem to be blonde that way. But there's those two who suffer from grave emotional and mental disorders. They too can get well if they have the capacity to be honest.
So let's tell our listeners what the requirements are now for membership.
Well, if you look at the third tradition, the first on the board, we have them like on the wall plaque, and it says a desire to stop drinking. And actually, if you look at the end of the tradition, it says you're a member if you say so.
Yes, I love that.
A lot of people miss that because we repeat the desire to stop drinking, and people hammer that home. But at the end of the tradition, it says, you're a member if you say so. So you don't even need the desire. That's how open it is. Nobody's going to force you to believe in anything. Now, Jesus is my higher power, and I work with sponsees that don't. And so when they pray, I say, pray to whom it may concern. It's sufficient to get you started. It's spiritual kindergarten. It's a good way to get started. AA works if you work it. If it's worked the way the originators intended it to work, it works great. When we dilute this thing and make the meetings recovery and not working the 12 steps with a sponsor and carrying this message to the next alcoholic, the one immunity we have from alcohol is intensive work with another alcoholic. This activity works when other activities fail. This is what happened with Bill, with the two Bills and the Bob. This was no big book. It was one drunk or two drunks talking to another drunk, drunks talking to each other before the big book.
Yes.
If nothing is so powerful as one drunk talking to another about a possible solution to his life-threatening situation. We find that alcoholism is a spiritual malady. It's a malady of body, mind, and spirit. And unless the spirit and all three are addressed, in the 12 steps. It's the repentance process for children. It works, folks. It really does. But all you have to do is be just a little willing, swallow that pride. You know, humility is like underwear. It's essential unless it shows, and then it's indecent. So all we ask is just, you saw Bob, Bill, humiliation, humility. Humiliation, humility. You don't have to go through the humiliation. All you have to do is take that first step.
First sponsor told me something that really helped a lot. It was drinking and drugging is a search for God at the wrong address.
Ah, amen. Yeah. Yes, it is. Even though you're in kindergarten, you don't have to stay in kindergarten. Secular recovery, I disagree with that wholeheartedly because the big book tells us God was everything or he was nothing. What was our choice to be? And so these folks are saying, okay, we're choosing him to be nothing. Good luck. Now, I know it's not going to. I know the thing is not going to work long time. They're going to try to force it to show that they're right. They're going to walk in the sparks of their own fire until they're singed to the bone, and people are going to die trying to follow that path. But you know what? Sometimes you got to have, you know, when I do good, evil is present, and sometimes it's just necessary. I hate to see it. I hate to see that kind of mentality. It's not necessary. You can be an agnostic in AA. You can be an atheist in AA. We don't care. All we ask you to do is to expand that spiritual experience and do certain things thoroughly. Have we seen a person fail who's thoroughly followed our path? Follow our path. You can believe whatever you want to believe, but just get started. Any last words, Harold? We'll close it up.
Well, it's like deciding I don't believe in gravity. Gravity doesn't really care. If I jump off the garage, I'm going to go down, not up.
I believe in gravity and inertia. Remember, a body in motion tends to stay in motion. A body at rest tends to get drunk.
Yes.
Thanks, Harold. Well, Rum Radio is in 151 foreign countries, including Mississippi, 128 2800 towns, cities, and villages. And we were over 300,000 hits to the website and continuing to go by word of mouth. So there's good information. It's a resource site. It's an informational resource site. You don't join anything. You don't have to put your email down. It's just information. Nobody's ever been raped by a book or made pregnant by a movie. It's just information. You take a look. If you don't like it, you don't have to do anything with it. If you do like it, there's great information on it. I wish I had it when I came in. It would have leaps and bounds, you know, my first meeting, sponsorship. It's all there. It's all in the big book. It's all 12 and 12. This is solid program information and has the ability to help many. So remember, like usual, we'll see you on the radio, rumradio.org. Good night.
Good night.
Well, of course not. You're putting that effort, the time, the money, all that aggravation. But the thing is, you know, and that, yeah, well.